It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. She's off today. She's been felled by the flu. I think we'll be seeing more of the... Kevin's doing double duty today. He's reading commercials, chortling, and doing sports all at the same time. Richard Roper has just stepped into the studio with us. And
wasn't it you, Darvish, was throwing like 80 miles an hour left-handed the other day? Like he can do both hands?
That's
right?
True.
Right? So that's like Kev. Doing his sports and the news
versatile.
And talking anything, yeah,
that's what you got to do in a situation like this. Although what I did find interesting is Kevin is particularly entertained by the updates on the Orchids of Asia story.
Oh gosh, yes,
as they are developing.
What are their hours daily? Just checking.
That was the first name for Imagine Dragons when they were just kids in high school. They were the Orchids of Asia. And they decided to go with Imagine Dragons. They liked something Far East sounding. So that was nice.
It sounds too feminine. Let's go Imagine Dragons.
Yeah. One thing I can't do, Ro, is play squash, though. One thing I can't do.
Okay. Squash. Now, Jen has been telling you all afternoon about this complete cluster blank that is going on at Union Station. 60,000.
Wow.
So an entire Soldier Field full of people are stranded right now at Union Station because there is a track problem. There's a computer problem. So they can only use one track in each direction at a time. Jeez. And they're doing this load and go thing where the trains are pulling in and they load them to the Tokyo.
Yeah.
And then they just send them out.
Wow.
So people are stranded. They're going to be there for hours. They're not quite sure how this is going to go. If you want to go out to Aurora, which is the most affected line here, because it's the busiest line, and that's where the load and go is really the most intense.
Okay.
It is, you're stranded for hours. Okay. If you want to get into an Uber, or a Uber, as a lot of people like to say.
Uber.
$138 to get to the western suburbs.
Classic surge pricing.
On your Uber.
You're pretty close to just getting a room.
That's not even the fancy car one.
Yeah, no. that's the one where the laundry basket's in the back, and they're like the person's like, I've got a flip phone. It doesn't have a GPS. How do I get to
the west suburbs? You got a light on you.
Do you mind if I smoke?
And then you hear a mild thumping.
Yeah.
And whimpering from what appears to be the trunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that an animal?
A cat appears out of nowhere.
Uber pool, make the most money.
Frank Vincent and Goodfellas in the trunk there.
Hey, man, you mind if I borrow this knife? Got something quiet in the grill there. Poof.
But yeah, I mean, you're getting pretty close where you just say, I'll get a room.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. Right? Make a staycation out of it. Post up.
Yeah.
Then so what do you do with your clothes?
Well, here's the problem.
Inside out, like Kev does.
Yeah. Yeah, just take your
good for another day.
Yeah. Underwear and just flip it around.
Hey.
It's fine. it's not perfect.
Wash them in the tub. Hope that they're dry by the morning.
You know, Walgreens also has a selection of underwear.
If
you go to the right, and if you can't find the underwear, just go to the the jockstrap section. They've got that too, just in case you've got.
You can bundle that with the green dealy bobbers that they've got out for St. Patrick's Day already.
They also have form fitting diapers now for adults, so you're really in trouble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there just happens to be at Union Station of all nights a squash tournament.
Yes, okay. So here's a problem.
Okay, what?
A little bit of an issue.
They have made a squash court in the old part of Union Station, the ceremonial part of Union Station.
The Great Hall or whatever they call it.
Yeah, the Great Hall.
Because they use that for benefits and things, right?
Yeah.
They rent it out.
Right.
Yeah.
But they have 60,000 people there now. They might need the extra space, but there are guys dressed all in white. They're dressed like Mike Monaco, actually.
Yeah.
They're wearing all white, and they've got like tennis sweaters tied around their necks.
Well, excuse me, I have to get through. Hold on, excuse me.
That's amazing.
Four. Your serve.
Well, people are freaking out as they're stranded at Union Station. The squash world championships are being held in the Great Hall.
Might not be a big overlap with your hard workaday commuters and your squash tournament experts. So why don't you just buy the railroad? What's the problem?
14 guys from Pakistan right now wondering who all these. Although that's not bothering them at all.
Yeah,
right.
Slow day here.
Small crowd. We're used to playing in front of bigger crowds here. Slow day. Is it a holiday?
You know what you need to do. You need to get on top of the train too. Gosh. If you want to go all the way out. You get to sit down, you get twice as many on if you get on top.
Wow. The timing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, It's not funny. But, you know, it's just one of those reminders that we're about three such breakdowns away from being the Walking Dead at any time. You know, everything hums along, but it's very precarious. Power outage here. Train signal problem there. It's the Walking Dead. All of a sudden, there's looting and zombies and, you know, cliques and factions. And
see, Richard, if anybody should know, you should. We're just not learning from Hollywood. We need to
exactly
what they're doing and coming from it.
So what caused the rioting? Well, 60,000 people were stranded at one of our train stations. We just happened to be holding the World Squash Championship.
The international Pakistani champion of squash was there. Exhorting people to get on top of the train.
What exactly is squash?
It's very, very good squash.
Like rich racquetball.
It's racquetball, except with a little thin racket and a smaller ball that doesn't bounce as much.
Huh. You have to be unbelievably skilled to be an actual
and
squash
the ball
player.
Is traveling at a very high speed.
Yeah.
Somebody's, I'm going to tell you, it's going to hit one of these people in the eye.
Right. Yeah.
Some guy just all angry, trying to get home.
Yeah,
get
some
out
guy
of the
from
city.
Blue Island.
Right.
Hey, you like that little mini racket right up your old quiche today, hey, buddy? Remember that, man. Gosh.
What a disaster.
Oh, my God. Well. I'm horrified by what we're up against here. And the lady, and, you know, God bless her. It's the worst thing in the world, right? The spokesperson for Metra.
Yes, that's a tough one.
This is, you know, when you wake up in the morning, this is what your day is going to be. It's never good. I totally understand that. But there are no answers.
No.
That's the thing. They can't tell us what has actually transpired here.
You feel bad for anybody who's working at the station, too, who's getting yelled at, who did not do anything wrong, just happens to be working tonight or this evening. You know, just getting yelled at.
The computer system that runs the signal had just went off this morning. So they have no idea where the trains are.
Have they tried unplugging the trains plugging them back in?
You know, they've had quite a year so far. They had to set the tracks on fire, right, during the polar vortex. Yeah. And that was making all the news. Like, all over the country, they're going, what is wrong with Chicago? Look at how crazy it is. They're setting their tracks on fire.
Again, you know, that's what it looks like. The apocalypse is close.
Maybe if they set the tracks on fire tonight, maybe that'll help the system.
All right, let's. You know what we got to do here. Mr. Roper is here to tell us about some films that are coming out this weekend, including one that you can find on your television.
Right.
That is gotten all of the publicity for the last couple of days. It's this Finding Neverland, right?
Leaving Neverland.
Whatever. That one of those. And that there's
I think I called it that three times in the first draft of my review. I kept remembering. That's the Johnny Depp movie where he plays J.M. Barrie, the creator of Peter Pan. This is Leaving Neverland.
Leaving Neverland.
Very different story.
Yes. Leaving Neverland is about Michael Jackson, and it's a pretty intense thing.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it right after we find out from Andrea what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Well, you just heard.
All right. Here he is. Richard Roper is in the studio with us, and I will just tell you that all of the stories I am seeing about Leaving Neverland are freaking me out.
Right.
Because this is a story about, this is a story of two kids that were friends with Michael Jackson when they were kids.
Exactly. Right? And now in their late 30s, two separate stories. One grew up in actually Australia. One in the United States. One was in one of the famous Pepsi commercials with Michael Jackson. The other one had won a dance contest. And in both cases, Michael took a liking to them and invited them to join him on tour. Again, separate stories. So Leaving Neverland is a four-hour documentary. When it premiered at Sundance last month, there was some people found it so intense they had to walk out. They did give it a standing ovation. These two men in their 30s, you know, have come forward. Now, it's an interesting story, too, because in the 2000s, they actually testified on behalf of Michael Jackson when there were civil suits against him and criminal charges against him, saying nothing ever happened. Now they're saying, again, in separate stories, they're finally to a point where they feel strong enough to tell the truth. And each of them tells their stories in horrific detail about how they were, you know, seduced in more ways than one and then abused, allegedly, by Michael Jackson, because it starts with him.
With very specific sex acts.
Yes, very specific and very details about what happened at the Neverland Ranch.
on trips to Paris. And now there's no, you know, there's no footage or audio of any of these horrific acts, but there's a lot of, you know, video and audio. There's no one disputing that these kids certainly were close to Michael Jackson, which is weird enough when you look back at it and you see the footage of him, like these little boys, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old, he would have them join him on stage for like one song at the end. And yet he would be, when he'd go from his hotel to his limo, he'd be holding hands with one of these little boys. And his, the boys' families would move to the Neverland Ranch or somewhere near Michael Jackson. He'd put them up and they would go on vacations. And the, there's, in both cases too, they talked to the mothers of these men who admit that they were just blinded by it. They were not sophisticated people. They had no money. They, you know, the biggest star in the world said their son was going to be a star, and they allowed, they didn't think there was abuse going on, but they were fine with Michael spending the day with their son, having endless phone conversations with their son. And finally, you know, one mom said, yeah, I thought it was fine for my son to sleep with Michael. I thought it would, he'd be perfectly safe in that hotel room. He's a guy in his 30s by then. And we're talking about a 9 or 10-year-old boy. So that's what the documentary is all about. And it's back and forth. You see the footage back in the 80s and 90s. And then you see the, you know, the two men talking in great detail about what they allege happened to them.
Now, obviously, Michael Jackson is dead, and there's no repercussion as there would be in the R. Kelly case.
Right.
Right. But does this change, do you think, forever the perception of Michael Jackson? Because after his death, people who were kind of leaning toward that, you know, he got off too easily in the trial, yeah, right, and all of that, that they, people have forgotten that and just, sort of immerse themselves back in the music and the,
yes,
artistry.
Yeah, that, yeah, that he definitely has been raised back to that icon status, and he's got an army of supporters. Believe me, when I gave this film, you know, I wrote about this film. No matter what you say about it, you will hear from Michael Jackson followers who haven't seen the film. And Michael Jackson's brothers have been out there, and they haven't seen the film, but they're saying none of this happened. They don't know, of course, it didn't happen, just as we don't know that it did happen. You know, the first time Michael Jackson was accused of child abuse was in the early 90s. Remember, there was the dentist who was sort of a Hollywood screenwriter type, right, who said his son had been abused. That guy, and there was a huge settlement paid in that case. There were no criminal charges.
There was more than one settlement paid by Michael Jackson.
And then there were other criminal charges. He was found not guilty on all the criminal charges of the case, I think, let's say, in the mid-2000s. But part of it was these two men at the time said nothing ever happened, and now they're saying it did. So, yeah, there's a lot of questions about that. Why now? But, of course, you know, they explain it. Both of these young men are very articulate, very believable, and, you know, unless you've been there, it's hard to question someone and say, well, why didn't you come forward? And they talk about, 10. Especially when they were 10, but even when you're in your 20s and you think it was your fault, and you've been led to believe that this was something special. And
they both talk about that specific piece, about the kind of mind games that they say were being played on them.
Yes, and the fact that Michael would tell them, listen, if anybody ever knows about this, we'll both be, you know, ruined forever, and all these kind of even elaborate ceremonies he'd have with them. And then they talk, too, about how they get to be a certain age, and then all of a sudden he wasn't interested in them anymore, whether, again, it was professionally or whatever. Then all of a sudden Macaulay Culkin comes along. And you know, Michael Jackson is very bizarre. At best, very bizarre and disturbing fixation, always little boys, and made them almost like props. We remember seeing that time and again, and people around him would always excuse it by saying, well, he never had a childhood himself, and he's just, you know, like Peter Pan. Well, that's madness.
It is madness. And yet, you know, there were interviews that he had done with Oprah and I think it was ABC's 2020, yeah, right, Diane Sawyer, when he got married to Elvis's daughter.
Yeah.
Right? It was such a moment of, well, we just have to suspend belief, or disbelief, I suppose. Suspend disbelief on how a guy could be hanging out with all these kids and everything is just fine.
Yeah.
It's just fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, there are things like faxes he would send to these boys, or little, you know. In fact, I think we have a clip where at the beginning you hear Michael on video wishing one of them a happy birthday when he was a little boy.
Hello, Wade. Today is your birthday, so congratulations. I love you. Goodbye.
There's no thoughts of this is wrong or anything like that.
He told me if they ever found out what we were doing, he and I would go to jail for the rest of our lives.
Secrets will eat you up. You feel so alone.
I want to be able to speak the truth as loud as I had to speak the lie for so long.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I'm not going to tell anybody this is an easy watch. Again, it's 2 parts, 2 hours each on HBO. But,
if you know, if you've been a fan of Michael Jackson or if you've followed, you know, the news about him all through the years, it's certainly, you know, worth seeing. And yeah, like I said, you know, I was asking questions. First of all, you want to scream at these mothers, even now, and God bless them. You know, they're heartbroken because they obviously believe their sons. But you want to go back in time and say, what were you possibly thinking by allowing your son to spend 2 hours on the phone with this guy all the time, to travel with him, to go on family vacations, to sleep in his bedroom with him?
Yeah.
What were you thinking? That seems, but you know, they do their best to explain it as well.
It'll be interesting to see if Macaulay Culkin changes his story. You know, he has been a defender. He's been alternately a defender and then just sort of neutral on the subject of Michael Jackson. But more often than not, and he said, listen, he did spend nights in his bed. Nothing ever happened. Nothing untoward ever occurred. You wonder. And then, of course, it would have an impact on Macaulay Culkin's career now, because you would see you'd look at Home Alone very differently.
Well, you know, we do not know what happened, but, you know, one avenue of speculation would be Macaulay Culkin came from a family where all the kids were acting. He was certainly a very savvy young kid by the time he was 10 or 11 years old. And Michael Jackson, you know, hard to get inside. You don't want to get inside the mind of a predator. Maybe wouldn't do something to Macaulay Culkin that he would do to somebody who comes from a much less sophisticated background.
It
might be more likely to speak up. That's, you know, that would be one avenue. I also would have loved to see, you know, not loved to see, but would have, you know, appreciated seeing, find some people that worked at Neverland. How did no one ever know what was going on? You know, find some, you know, concert promoters and managers. And this documentary is purely from the side of these two families whose voices certainly deserve to be heard. But if you're a Jackson defender, you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, where's the proof? And there really is. And it's always going to be open. You know, we're never going to know for sure.
So you're suggesting this is a well done piece.
It feels like a very good, you know, in a way, deposition sometimes more than a documentary where these two young men tell their stories. And, you know, and I'll tell you, if the two of them are, and we've certainly seen stories in recent days about liars or people that sometimes make up stories, but if these two guys are making up these stories, wow, that's a lot of detail.
Well,
you know, in both cases.
All right.
That would have to be fabricated.
All right. Leaving Neverland on HBO.
Yes.
Sunday and Monday, right?
Yeah. Right. You know, you can get on all your demands and all that stuff.
We have all the rest of we got a couple other movies we want to talk about, and we'll try to get you home. If you're on your way to Union Station to take a train to go home, you might want to call ahead, because Union Station, as you're going to hear here in Andrea's news, is a mess because of a switching signal problem.
The Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantes. Neither of them in the studio at this moment. Kevin Powell's been helping out here. Rose taking care of some business. A lot of people don't realize he's got like a lot of the other duties, so he's probably calming down some of the Metra problem right now. He might have just walked over there real
Rose
fast.
Rose out there like as a tour guide. Here's where you should go. Here's a great bar. You never heard of this one. Go to this restaurant.
Good sneak joint. There's good way of getting there, too. Let me tell you something. The lamb chops aren't on the menu, but ask for Ralph, and he'll help you with this.
Yeah.
Well, I got to talk to you real quick, Kev, before we get back to the movie stuff with Rose. This Bryce Harper thing.
Oh, man.
I think the thing that people seem to be most fascinated about is the 13 years.
Yeah.
Everybody on Twitter's like, in 13 years, I'll be 57. In 13 years, you know, like everyone's trying to figure all that out.
Can you believe in 13 years it'll be the year 2032? I'm like, well, that's how it works.
Yeah, people just, you know, can't, you know, that really took people by
surprise. Maybe because it's just sort of an odd number, 13. Yeah. Normally you hear like 6, 8, 10. 13 was sort of like nobody really saw it. I wasn't hung up on the 13 years. Some people were like, can you believe Harper settled for 25 a year because Machado got 30? You go, dude, he just got $330 million. I think Bryce Harper's having a pretty good day.
And I love when everybody calculates like per at-bat, per swing,
well, I
per
did that
hair
in my
gel.
Report, grand per game.
Which is all true, but you know, it also doesn't take into account everything else that goes into it. It's
That's
a little
true.
Bit of money. There's no doubt about that. And you know, the good thing for Bryce Harper is he's going to the warmest, most welcoming, most forgiving sports town in all the world. So,
and Philly fans over the past few days were ripping him on social media because they were fed up with the wait, because it was always assumed the Phillies, and now they're like, oh, wait, he's actually coming here? Because they were doing the whole, we don't need him anyway thing, because it looked like he was going to go to the Dodgers or Giants. But Harper, $330 million richer today.
I did love the idea that they originally tried to pay him after he was 60.
It was deferred 100. It was like pay him $200 million while he plays, and then defer 100 until he's 60.
Right.
So for 28 years after that 39 when the deal's up. So for an extra 20 years or so, they'd somehow find a way to pay him another $100 million.
And
the Washington Nationals
wanted to do that. And people always talk when they talk about these contracts. Still, maybe the most infamous of the bad contracts. And I saw this today on Twitter. 4 years after Bryce Harper's contract comes to a close, the Mets will just have finished paying Bobby Bonilla. They have 17 more years to pay on Bobby Bonilla's contract.
And it's like $1 million per year, right? Because there's always Bobby Bonilla Day where people tweet out because it's the day in which the Mets have to pay him.
They have to pay him for 17 more years.
So people go, happy Bobby Bonilla Day. He's doing nothing right now but getting paid. I mean, it's all like some crazy deferred contract that somehow the Mets got into.
My goodness.
I have no understanding of baseball contracts anymore, of how this whole thing works. If you're Babe Ruth, you're going to come back from the dead.
Oh, my gosh.
You're going to hit. That's the first thing you got to do. You're going to hit 350. You're going to make $500 million. You're going to pitch 2 innings a night, too. You're going to close as well.
Well, you think about the guys who just missed it. I mean, look, they made good livings, but it's only a generation ago where, you know, if a guy was getting a couple million a year, it was a big deal. And so, you know, there's some guys, you know, just maybe retired around the mid-90s or so are saying, are you kidding me?
Well, and the other thing, too, is that in baseball, unlike football, and to some degree basketball, because, you know, the lifespan of basketball players isn't great either because of their size and the impact on their joints of what that's all about. Baseball players, like golfers, they kind of go off into the sunset pretty well, unless they were roiding themselves up and they've got...
Yeah, you always read about the baseball. You know, Don Newcomb just passed away, the Dodgers great, who was the first African-American pitcher in the major leagues. You know, it was with the Dodgers, with Jackie Robinson. He just passed away. He was in his 90s.
Oh,
you know?
God.
And you see that all the time with
these
ballplayers.
Don't tell Mark Meadows about that. That's... What?! A black pitcher.
Oh my God!
Now wait a second.
Do you know him? As he pulls another random.
Oh my God, look at this! Look what they did. Oh, man. Next thing you know, they have black quarterbacks. I don't understand how the game has gotten to that. Maybe there's sizable payrolls too, right? Because you carry a lot of players. You carry more players in baseball than you do in almost anything except for football.
The other thing is, you know, with baseball being a 25-man sport and, you know, 9 men on the field, even the greatest baseball players do not guarantee a huge upswing in a franchise. Obviously, you want to get a Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, but, you know, it's very hard for any baseball player to make the impact. None can make the impact of a, you know, LeBron James in his prime going to a franchise as one of 5 starters. Or even, I would say, even a Khalil Mack or a quarterback in football.
Right.
It's so, you know, it's a lot of money. Look, he's a great player, but he's also been a guy who's been hurt a couple of times. Bryce Harper hitting 35 homers doesn't guarantee your team is now the favorite to win the World Series.
Well, look at the Angels. They have... guy who might go down as a top 5, maybe the second greatest baseball player of all time in Mike Trout, and they've been to the playoffs once since he's been on the
Kevin,
roster.
Don't you have to do this all night long now?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Rich and I got like a little baseball crazy.
Mariners had Randy Johnson and Kevin Griffey Jr., I remember, and they had to get rid of both of them to win a bunch of games, oddly enough.
Right.
Hey, there's some movies coming out.
Yes, what is it, Richard?
We got time for a couple movies?
We do.
Let's talk about this movie called Greta. Now, Isabelle Huppert is like this French actress who's been around forever, right? She's in this movie with Chloe Grace Moretz, who we talked to when she was just a youngster in studio.
Very composed young woman.
And this is a very interesting take on the stalker psycho movie, because Chloe Grace Moretz plays a young woman in New York City. She finds a purse on the train that was running at the time. And sorry, it's too soon. And then brings the purse, finds the owner of the purse, who's this old French lady, and they become friends. But then it turns out that old French lady is... crazy old French lady. So now this is the scene where Chloe Grace Moretz is working at a New York City restaurant, and her new friend, who's 40 years older than her, who's kind of a mother figure, is now starting to stalk her.
Sharply.
May I? Bit like you. Promises a lot, then disappoints.
Okay.
I deserve better!
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
You can't do this to me. to Earth.
Are you a child?
No, you're the child. You need someone to love. You need a mother to hold you. You love someone, and you're afraid to love. We both know it's true.
Don't you dare talk to me about my mother.
Darling, don't you understand? She had to die. She had to die, but...
A lot of glass breaking in Greta. I'm giving it...
I don't know what's going on there.
I'll tell you what. I'm giving it 2 stars because I like the way it started because it is kind of interesting to have this delicate, sophisticated 65-year-old French woman as the crazy psycho stalker killer. But then it just becomes like every other stalker movie, every other single white female, and you... In the last half hour, characters have to do incredibly stupid things or the movie will just grind to a halt. I mean, even stupid for being in a psycho stalker movie. For one thing, if you knock down the psycho stalker, don't turn your back and think they're knocked out for good. You know they're getting back up. Have you never seen any other stalker movies? It's disappointing because this is directed by Neil Jordan, who goes all the way back to movies like The Crying Game. So it's this really stylish look. And for the first hour, you think we might be seeing like a horror masterpiece. But then it just goes off the rails. So disappointing. 2 stars for Greta.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. Although, all that breaking of stuff sounded like Oscar night at Mar-a-Lago.
There was a lot of, a lot of good breakage.
Oh, my God. Look. Who's that?
Who's bleeding from the face? It's one of my critics. There you go.
If I see another Oscar, go to a... Oh.
You just cringe in these movies when there's a dog, because as we all know in horror movies, the dog...
Oh, no.
Things can get tough for the dog.
Oh, no, I don't want to... No. See, there should be a rule in Hollywood.
Yeah,
That you can kill as many people as you want, but leave the dogs alone.
Yeah, little rescue puppy.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I'm not saying if the dog lasts or not. I'm just saying there's a moment where we worry about the dog.
You always worry about the dog more than the actual people.
Well, every horror movie where the family moves out to the country in that house that has that one room, you can't go in because it's bolted shut. And there's always the curious dog who goes out on the porch in the middle of the night. And then in the morning, Bojangles! Bojangles! Mommy!
But they never show Bojangles. They'll show a guy get cut in half with gunfire.
That's true.
But they never show the dead dog.
They won't because the people will walk out of the audience. You can slaughter a million people in these Transformers or Fast and Furious movies. No one ever cares that while they're doing that high-speed chase, they're killing millions of innocent civilians along the way. But when John Wick's puppy, when that little beagle named Daisy in the first John Wick got it from the Russian bad guys...
You know where we learned this, don't you? You know, the great Casey Kasem taught us.
That's right.
That you cannot make a transition to a dead dog.
That's right. Dedication, right?
No matter what you do, it is just not possible.
Showbiz 101.
Yes. Everything we know about show business, we learned in radio.
We're up to our long-distance dedication. And this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's come start again. I'm coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but... But if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a f***ing up-tempo record every time I do a damn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. It's a god last time I want somebody to use his brain to not come out of a record that is that's up-tempo, and I got to talk about a dog dying.
Oh, my gosh.
The greatest ever.
See, we learned that from Casey Kasem to explain to us that you just can't kill the dog in entertainment. They do not want to do that.
I have to confess, that was me. I was 12 years old and I made up the whole story. I just always felt like pranksters were sending him letters. Let's say the dog was named Snuggles. Mailing it in. There was no verification. It was 1974. They were coming out of Ballroom Blitz by Sweet. And then he had to go,
here's a dedication from Harry Perry Testes in Canton, Ohio.
Is Don on the phone?
Under the Bleachers by Seymour Butts. like a Simpsons thing. Snuggles.
Who writes the Casey Kasem? The dog's died. You know what? Let's see if we can play something by Lobo for us. Like, what? How's that going to help the family?
We recently had a death in our family.
He goes, here's a song. He goes, this letter, even, whether you have a child or a dog or neither. It's the best.
Poor Casey.
Did he finally get buried?
It was a long time that body was
yeah, I think he's still out. We're going to have him in for the Carnarvon wagon.
Oh, my God.
We can actually chill the drinks.
Bring Snuggles.
All right, let's check in Don Clappin in the newsroom. What's coming up at the top of the hour?